we will get through this, and we can have a supreme confidence because our hope is firmly anchored, number one, a sovereign God, and number two, a resurrected Christ.
Welcome to the Search in Your City podcast. I'm your host, Blaine Larson, and this is part one of a three-part series on hope. And these will be dropping every Monday for the next 3 weeks. And my guest for all 3 weeks is Dave Krueger. And Dave is Search's Vice President of Mission Advancement. He's been with us since 1980. And before that, Dave was a pastor in Florida for several years. And before that, Dave served in the Army as a number of different roles, but ultimately as a drill sergeant, which is hard for me to believe, Dave. I still got to admit that to you. let's see. Dave went to Central Washington University, where he earned his bachelor's degree. He earned a graduate degree from Multnomah University, and ultimately he got his Master of Theology degree from Dallas Theological Seminary. And throughout his time with Search, Dave has served in a number of different chaplain roles to professional athletic teams, including the Baltimore Colts and Ravens football teams, the Orioles, and also to the PGA Tour, the golfers. Now, all that is fantastic, but here is the most amazing thing about Dave Krueger, and that is that he's been married to his amazing and beautiful wife, Roxy, for 50 years. And they have 3 children and 5 grandchildren. So I know of nobody to speak about hope better than you, Dave. So thank you for joining me today on the podcast.
Hey, Blaine, I'm really looking forward to this. Thanks for having me.
Well, I am too, Dave, and let's just dive right into it. So why should we be discussing hope right now?
That's a great question, Blaine. And as I thought about it, when I think of history, it's filled with stories that are moments that can often bring fear and uncertainty and hopelessness. But I don't think we've ever seen anything like we are currently experiencing, at least not in my lifetime. And that's this coronavirus.
And that's been a significant length of time, too, your lifetime.
Yes. Okay. Add up the numbers. 50 years of marriage, 3 kids, 5 grandchildren. It's a big number. But I think the difference in this pandemic is it's global. It's impacting the whole world. I mean, Corona is no respecter of age or gender or race or country or continent. And I remember just a few weeks ago, I went to see my cardiologist and concluded the checkup. And he said, well, Dave, before you leave, he said, I'd like to just share something with you. And he looked me right in the eye and he said, you need to be aware about this corona thing. This was before it really was the onset of it. He says, this will be global, seismic. It'll be like a tsunami. It'll be a pandemic. And I said, well, what does that have to do with me? And he says, well, you're high risk, along with your wife, Roxy. So he said, I want you guys to self-quarantine. So we've done that for the last 6 weeks. And one of my daughters is making real sure that mom and dad don't leave the house. And so it's that reality check. And as I step back, Blaine, and I process all this, I'm asking the question, where's the hope in the midst of the crisis like this? And I would imagine many of you are asking the same question I'm asking. And I remember a book that was written by Hal Lindsey back in the early 70s. Bible prophecy was all the popular topic, and there were a lot of books, and I bought most of them, and I read them. But there was one in particular called The Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey. Just a little paperback, sold 30 million copies. And I don't remember all that was in the book, but on the jacket was this quote. He said this, man can live for 40 days without food, several days without water, several minutes without oxygen, but only 1 second without hope. You know, and honestly, Blaine, I have never forgotten that quote. Because if Lindsey's right, and mankind can only live for 1 second without hope, it seems we would all do well to ask and wrestle with the question, what is our hope? What is the basis or foundation for our hope? And certainly, in the context of the crisis of corona. But I would propose that it's even a bigger question than this, because the corona moment will pass, we hope and pray. But beyond that, what is my ultimate hope in life? And, you know, my experience is that a crisis like corona is what I call a wake-up call, you know, which is a moment or an experience where we hopefully hit the pause button and we ask some of what I call the big questions in life, like, why am I here? What is the purpose of my life? Where do I go when this life ends? Is there life beyond this one? And in this present moment, the question I think we're all asking, what is our hope? And as I've kind of tried to assess this, Blaine, I think there's some good news on this front. I was reading the other day, and I think people are searching. I think people are looking for answers. I think people are longing for hope. And Greg Laurie is the pastor of Harvest Christian Fellowship Church in California. And they have a weekly online audience, around 8,000. That was before the pandemic. The first week after this, when they were forced to gather online, like we're all doing now, the audience jumped to 250,000 from 8,000. Following week was 350,000. The next week, 634,000. And on Easter Sunday, the audience grew to 1.3 million people. And I understand the sale of Bibles has spiked and people are praying more than they ever have. What that tells me is that people are looking, people are searching for answers. Answers that I think that are going to give them some hope in the middle of this crisis.
Well, I couldn't agree more, Dave. I mean, you talk about the Hal Lindsey quote and that we can't live for a second without hope, right? You know what it made me think of was a long time ago, in my previous life, I was in the music business and I was a singer, and you know this, Dave, but for everybody that's listening, and around 2004, 2005, my first single came out, and it was a song called How Do You Get That Lonely? And it really was a dark song. The premise of it was the story. It's a true story, by the way. A lot of people ask about that, but it's a true story of a young man who lost hope and ultimately took his life. And, you know, unfortunately, through that song and the experience of that having touched a lot of people, as I was out touring and meeting folks around that time, I just remember it woke me up, Dave, in the sense it woke me up to that there's a lot of people with no hope, and they do the ultimate, just rough, I don't know, way out of it, I guess, is what it seems like to them. But there's this need, and I think you're right. So right now, I think it's brought up again.
Yeah, I think so, Blaine. That's why I said that. I think certainly we're in the immediate moment with the corona thing, and we're looking for hope there. But I think it's a bigger question that goes beyond this moment, because if it's not corona, it'll be something else. It can be any number of human experiences that we go through that cause us to just stop and think, what's this all about? How do I navigate this? Is there an end that will be a benefit to me in this sacred journey? And that's the question of hope. So, by the way, what's the name of that song that you wrote?
How Do You Get That Lonely?
How Do You Get That Lonely?
Yeah. Yep. So, all right, let's look here, Dave, at hope. And one of the things that I always feel is important is defining terms, especially with a word like hope, where it can mean all kinds of different things. So to get us started, how would we define hope, Dave?
Good question. I couldn't agree more. We need to define the term. What is hope? And I suspect if you just did a random man on the street interview and asked the question, what is hope, you'd get all kinds of responses. So I thought, well, I'm going to try that. And I did a brief survey, and I got a couple of responses that were interesting. The first person I talked to said, well, hope is hoping for the best outcome. and went on to elaborate kind of a wishful thinking or the power of positive thinking that this will all be good, kind of a cross your fingers optimism that it will all work out in the end. And I thought to myself, that feels like circular reasoning. I'm hoping and hope with the hope that it will all work out. So I think a lot of us use the term very generically. And it doesn't have a lot of meaning. I mean, for example, I hope the Baltimore Ravens win the Super Bowl next season, if we get to play football at all. Okay.
Yeah.
I hope that you get that job. I hope that you feel better soon. I hope this pandemic ends soon. And then I talked to another person, and they were a little bit more thoughtful. He said, you know, I think hope is wishful thinking that about something over which you don't have control. And as I thought about that, I said, I like that. There's a sense in which there really is nothing we can do in this corona thing other than follow the guidelines set by the government. Social distance, wash your hands, wear a mask, use common sense. So clearly those definitions leave me wanting more. So I took a little time in my study and I looked at the topic of hope in the Bible. Discovered that the term is used about 130 times between the Old and New Testament. And there are a number of definitions or descriptions. Let me just throw a few out there for our listeners. Hope is a strong and confident expectation about the future. Notice the word strong, confident, expectation, future. The implication is that hope is forward-looking. Another definition is hope is the full assurance about a desired outcome. And then John Piper, well-known pastor and prolific author, said this: biblical hope not only desires something good for the future, it expects it to happen. And not only expects it to happen, is confident that it will happen. And the words that struck me were desires, expects, and confidence. And then I was really struck as I was looking at this material. Our 32nd president, FDR, said we always held to the hope, the belief, the conviction that there is a better life, a better world beyond the horizon. So I love those definitions. They've got a little bit more substance to them. When I look at words like strong, confident, expectation, full assurance, desired income, or not income, outcome, expectation, and confidence that it will happen. And then I love what FDR said, because he went from hope to belief to conviction that there is a better life and a better world beyond the horizon.
Yeah, David.
So that's go ahead.
No, well, I think that is really helpful. I didn't want anybody to miss this point that there's, I think, a difference between what the Bible means by the word hope and the way that it is used most often, just, you know, by the general population out in the culture, however we're talking. I hope the Ravens go to the Super Bowl, that kind of thing. Both valid definitions, but for something as serious as what we're going through, or when you talk back to the big questions of life that you mentioned, what happens when this is all over? You know, is there anything or nothing? And is there a God or not? Those aren't things we want to be wishful about, right? We want to have this kind of confidence, or at least I do. And so I just found it interesting that the Bible speaks of it in those certain terms when I think a lot of folks might have thought it would speak in very uncertain terms.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, it's like 130 times. It is a central theme of the Bible. It's a central theme to the Christian journey. And so it clearly goes way beyond what the culture would say, which is just the wishful thinking, cross your fingers thing. There's substance to it. In fact, let me throw out an illustration that might help. Let's take this a little bit further in terms of a biblical understanding of hope. In the ministry that I've been with for 40 years, Search, we talk about faith a lot. But one of the things we say is, you know, again, where people in the culture say, well, you just need to have faith, and it, but it doesn't have any substance or direction to it. So in search, we say that faith is only as valid as the object in which you place it. Now, I want to urge people to stop and think about that for a moment. I have faith, but it's only valid as the object in which I choose to place it. Let me illustrate it. A person can have all the faith in the world that the ice on the lake will support them, even though it's only a half inch thick. They have great faith that it will not, that it'll keep them from falling through the ice. On the other hand, a person can have a little faith in a valid object, and so using the same analogy, even with a modest faith, a person can venture out on the ice because they know it is 2 feet thick. So a great faith in ice that's only a half inch thick is not going to work. But even a modest faith in ice that's 2 feet deep works, because it's the difference between having an invalid object or a valid object. Does that make sense to you, Blaine?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, you know, because faith and hope are tied together. There's that famous passage there in 1 Corinthians 13 where Paul says faith, hope, and love, you know, these are the greatest things.
Absolutely. And we'll talk about that probably in our next session, that faith, hope, and that triad of faith, hope, and love.
Yeah. So I love that illustration, Dave. It's real helpful because it's showing that it really does matter what we place our hope in. It's not just hope for hope's sake. It's hope, and you want to be sure, and you want to have a confidence about it. So this has been a great introduction, I believe, to the topic of hope. And I want to pivot a little bit now, Dave,
sure,
and spend the rest of our time talking about really the main point of this first podcast on hope, which is the nature and character of God. Because, Dave, in your studies, one of the things that came out was the object of hope is God. So we've got to understand what God is like. And I think there's so much we can unpack here. So I just want to turn it over to you and say, you know, God, Dave, who is God? What's he like? How does it apply to hope?
Sure.
Easy questions.
Yeah, right. And we got just a few minutes left here. You know, as I use the analogy that faith is only as valid as the object in which you place it, I would say the same thing is true of hope. Hope is only as valid as the object in which you place it. So what I would like to do is think of hope as defined in the Bible, and we've given you some ideas about what that is. I think it's anchored in two fundamental truths. And I'm just going to cast those out there for our audience to listen to and think about and process and maybe have coffee with someone and discuss them. And the first anchor for our hope, as you've already alluded to, Blaine, is the truth about God. In one of the passages, as we've been quarantined at home, and we've been listening to a lot of online messages on Sunday, we've been listening to podcasts, and one of the passages is getting a lot of interest during the season of uncertainty, Psalm 46, as well it should be. It's an amazing psalm, maybe my favorite. In verses 1 and 2, it says, God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear. It seems there is a cause-effect. God is a refuge and strength, two of his characteristics. And as a result of that, I don't have to fear. In fact, I can have hope. So you can see the relevance of these verses as we look at this thing called hope in the midst of chaos and uncertainty. God is a refuge. God is our strength. He's an ever-present help. He's our hope. And so that's kind of the way the psalm starts out, but then and he builds his case, and then I think the big idea, if you will, is found in verse 10, where we read this well-known verse, be still and know that I am God. And Blaine, I have spent a lot of time pre-corona just pondering that passage. And it's in so doing, I've come up with three basic steps that I think allow us to build a case for an absolute, unwavering hope and have an anchor in God. And it was interesting, as I was looking at Psalm 46:10 again, I counted the words. You know how many words are in that verse, Blaine?
No, tell me, Dave.
Eight words, man. Only eight words. But man, are they packed. I think they're absolutely life-changing as we understand them and apply them. So let me unpack it. I would say the first part of this. So the first step is be still. This is what I call the discipline of solitude. This is the discipline of quiet reflection on the nature and the character of God as he longs to be known. Most of us were living life at a breakneck pace before the corona thing, and now we have slowed down, and some of us are trying to figure out how to adjust to this new rhythm in life. And here's what I would suggest. I would urge you to use this opportunity for times of quiet reflection as you read your Bible, as you pray, as you enjoy the presence of God. Because this solitude, this silence is not just about knowing about God. It's knowing God. And there is a difference. So we just need to slow down. Socrates put it this way. Beware the barrenness of a busy life. Beware the barrenness of a busy life. I love how another author put it. He says, quiet is the think tank of the soul. And we might be moving someplace that we're not accustomed to, this idea of solitude and silence. It's in front of us. Make use of the time. Find a place in your home that you call your sacred place. And play some worship music. If you haven't already begun journaling, start now. Jot down what you are thankful for, along with some specific prayer requests. Read a book. I was looking through my library, and there was a book I read some time ago by Max Lucado. Be anxious for nothing. It's basic. It's well illustrated. It's applicable. And I have a couple of other authors that are my favorites. And if their name is on the book, I read it. And that's Tim Keller and Paul Tripp. So just whatever you gather, wherever you want to move with this, fill your mind with a faith that defeats fear and gives you hope. So you find that sacred place. For some of you, that sacred place is just to go for a walk. If you're a photographer, take some pictures that capture the beauty of spring. And be creative as you listen for what I call the whispers of God. Because if you seek him, he will reveal himself to you. So step one is just be still, discipline of solitude. I see a second step in the next two words, be still and know. And I think of this as the discipline of study. And I'm just here to tell you, and I would imagine, Blaine, you would agree wholeheartedly, the greatest study you can do in life is the study of the character and the nature of God. One of my favorite go-to books is written by A.W. Tozier. It's called The Knowledge of the Holy. And I've always been a believer that a good book captures you with the very first sentence. So in the first chapter, first paragraph, first sentence of this book, Knowledge of the Holy, this is what Tozier says. The most important thing about a person is what comes into their mind when they think about God. I read that decades ago, and it struck me, and it prompted me and moved me on the journey that if the most important thing about Dave is what comes into my mind when I think about God, I need to delve into this. And so for many years, that has been a big part of my discipline. And so when I unpack God, words that come to my mind, Blaine, are like, God is omnipresent. He's everywhere. He's omniscient. He knows everything. He's omnipotent. He's all powerful. He's sovereign. He's in absolute control. You know, but at the same time, God is loving and he's gracious and he's merciful and he's good. And these are just some of the attributes of God. So, Blaine, let me ask you a question. Another one of the attributes of God is that he's immutable. Can you tell us what that means?
Well, immutability is the idea that God cannot change, and he's the same always. And it's one of the reasons why. Take, for instance, the Bible. Dave, you mentioned hope is one of the major themes of the Bible. In fact, that's true. We're looking to the future, to hope. And when you read it, you read these stories that have happened in the past, a lot of them. And one of the reasons we have hope is because we know that because God's immutable, he doesn't change. He what he's done for people in the past, that's a model and a promise for what he's going to do for his people in the future. We can trust that because he's not flippant. He's not changing his mind all the time.
Yeah, I think it's Psalm 77 where the psalmist begins to question God, like for the first 10 verses. And, you know, because they're not sure what God is doing, and he seems distant and aloof. And then there's a verse, I think it's like 10 or 11. I don't have my Bible in front of me. But then I stopped and I remembered. And remembering is huge, because if you look at life, you go through this stuff, and God met you at your point of need. He always will. Maybe not at the time we think about it or in the way that we might have expected, but God always, that's his nature. He's loving, gracious, merciful, and good. And so I'm in a tough moment right now. Let's call it corona, or I'm quarantined, or I have the virus. I have to ask myself the question, well, has God changed? Is he no longer faithful and available and interested and concerned about me? No, God hasn't changed. So he has that same compassion for me and love and mercy for me. So because he's been faithful in the past, he's immutable, as you defined it very well. He hasn't changed. I can trust him to be faithful today. And by the way, I can trust him to be faithful for the rest of my life. And so, you know, those are just some of the as I was thinking about this, just some of the characteristics about the nature of God that came to me.
Hey, Dave, can I ask you a question? And this wasn't necessarily part of what we were going to talk about, but it feels like a good time to bring this up, because I can imagine that there's somebody listening to this podcast and they're saying, this sounds fantastic. This God sounds amazing and great, but how do we know that this God is actually real and that Blaine and Dave here aren't just a bunch of nuts? Which, well, that might be true, but seriously though, Dave, I mean, can you just real quick, I mean, what are some reasons to think that God actually exists?
Well, for me, from personal experience, the Bible speaks very clearly about the existence of God. The very first words in the book of Genesis, chapter 1, in the beginning God, okay? So the story begins there, and in one of, hopefully maybe our next podcast, we'll talk about the story of the Bible, and that might be another way to approach your question. But in the beginning, God, and then you go all the way through the 66 books, and you land in Revelation chapter 22. It ends with the same affirmation about God. So it begins and ends with the story of God. So that would be one revelation for me, the revelation of the Bible. For me personally, as I suggested, go for a walk and take some pictures of the flowers and the scenery and the blooming of springtime. And I see that and I say, there has to be someone behind this. It didn't just happen. So for me, that's what I would call a revelation in nature that declares the existence of God. Look up into the sky at night, you see the stars, the constellations. All of that is screaming, there is a God who is behind this and created it. So there's that revelation about God. That would be kind of a general revelation. I think there's another kind of revelation called a special revelation, and that is the person of Jesus Christ. We'll talk about him just a moment more in our next podcast. If you have seen Jesus, you've seen God. And the mystery of the two of them together in the Trinity. And then the last part for me would be, I just know it because he's been active in my life. I don't have time to go into my story, but my life was headed in a very, very desperate role. And then it wasn't until I encountered God through the person of Jesus Christ that it changed my life for this lifetime and the lifetime to come. So those are some just general observations. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Tim Keller, and I just would make a book recommendation here. If somebody's listening to this and you're hearing us talk and you want some more depth to this particular topic, Evidence for God, there's a great book called The Reason for God by Tim Keller, mm-hmm. and it's got all kinds of fantastic information. But I think for me personally, Dave, the evidence that was most convincing or powerful to me was the evidence behind creation, and specifically the universe and the nature of the universe, how we mm-hmm. we now know because of Einstein and some of his theories, and because of Hubble and a bunch of other scientists. But over the last 100 years, we've been able to understand that the universe is not eternal. And that was a big shift in the scientific community. And so let's dive back in here to Psalm 46, because we've looked at be still, the idea of solitude. We've looked at know me and know that I am and that's a study part, as we've been talking about.
Discipline of study.
Right. What's the last part, Dave?
It's the last four words, that I am God. So there's an intentionality. I need to be still. And I think what the psalmist is saying is that we'll never discover the fullness of God if we're chronically busy. As Socrates put it, beware the barrenness of a busy life. And I think it's not just a matter of sitting in solitude. I think there needs to be content. And that's a study of the Word of God and some of the things that you talked about, The Reason for God by Tim Keller. And that leads to that I am God. And I call this a discipline of surrender. Because if I figure out, Blaine, who this God is and what his plan is, it's just revealed in the Bible. I, for one, want to surrender to that God, because it's the most amazing story in all of history. And so it's this idea of surrender. And that's hard for us. It's hard for me, but I've learned that discipline over the years. I mean, one of the things that was a kind of a moment for me is, as you mentioned earlier, I've served as a PGA Tour chaplain for a long time. And one of my favorite events was the BC Open up in Endicott, New York. And the host was a guy by the name of Johnny Hart, and he was a nationally syndicated cartoonist. So on Wednesday mornings of the tournament, he would hold the Johnny Hart open breakfast, you know, 300-400 people. And he had always asked me if I would bring a PGA player up to be a guest speaker. So this particular year, I had Tom Lehman, good friend. And so the people had gathered and, you know, everybody's talking, a lot of commotion and noise. And he finally gets up on the platform and he does two things a speaker should never do. He blew into the microphone, then he hit it with his hand, trying to get everybody to quiet down. And he says, ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement to make. Well, I'm assuming somebody left their lights on. We found some keys. Somebody needs to call home. And I'm telling you, Blaine, this one just rocked me. He's sitting up front there, leans into the microphone, and this was his announcement. God is God and you're not. I don't know why it struck me. And I thought to myself, that was a theological education in a moment. And I've never forgotten those words. And so I go back to that book by Tozier, The Knowledge of the Holy. And he says a little later in the book, the person who comes to a right belief about God is relieved of 10,000 problems. Let that one sink in. A right belief about God is relieved of 10,000 problems. And I would assume that within those 10,000 problems, we can say that includes the really hard moment we're in right now with this corona thing. So that's Psalm 46 and the first anchor, which is an anchor yourself in the true God of the Bible. I'm going to wrap this up with one other anchor, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the second anchor is what I call a hope in the resurrected Christ. Just a little backstory for me. I grew up in a church setting that was very fundamental, and they taught me exactly what to believe, but never told me why. So I go off to college with dreams, and it wasn't long before I began to question what I really believed. It was being challenged. I was getting asked questions I couldn't answer. And the only faith I had was that which my church gave me and my parents taught me. So for me, that journey was really wrestling with two fundamental questions as I started to rebuild my faith. And one of those two questions was the resurrection. Did Jesus Christ really rise from the dead as recorded in the Bible? Because if he did not rise, the Bible tells us we are absolutely hopeless. But if he did arise, we are eternally hopeful. And in brief, what I discovered is there are eight theories or so that skeptics have developed to explain away the resurrection. Now, I just came to the conclusion it takes more blind faith to believe one of the theories than it does to believe the compelling historical evidence for the resurrection. And I had my moment, and it changed my life. And by the way, that's what Search is all about. It's one of the reasons I have been with Search for 40 years. And that's just to help people out that are seeking and searching. They have honest questions, and they really want honest answers. They want to have them in an environment where it's an exchange and a conversation. And that's what we are doing in the mission of Search. We have a statement that says we're helping people, particularly adults, just take their next step toward God. So I love to think in pictures, Blaine. So let's wrap this up. And I want to leave you with a picture of hope that's built on two anchors, a sovereign God and a resurrected Christ. It was just a few weeks ago, March 5th to be exact, there was a famous tightrope walker named Nick Walenda. And he pulled off an amazing feat. He crossed the famous canyon down in Nicaragua called the Masaya Volcano. And I remember being glued to the TV, watched the whole thing. He had to traverse on a cable, 1,800 feet long, stretched across the volcano. And by the way, the volcano was active. I mean, you could see it. It was hot and boiling up lava and toxic fumes.
So this guy's clearly a good thinker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. And I'm sitting there. And I mean, it was surreal. But the commentators were describing in detail how the cable is connected to these two anchor points on either side of the volcano. Let's just say the cable was looking at the anchors. I'm assuming that it was going to hold. But it was interesting that even Nick Walenda took some moments right before he got out on that cable to walk that 1,800 feet, where I think he was looking at these anchors and saying, okay, one last look. And I believe they will hold me. And the story turned out well. It took him 31 minutes to cross over. And as he was doing it, he had to deal with high winds and smoke and ashes that came from the volcano. And I just think, Blaine, sometimes life is a high wire act. We face challenges and circumstances, and we oftentimes have no control over them. To paint the picture, we're like Walenda, man. We're 2,000 feet above the volcano. And that might be for us right now, this virus. But this is what I can tell you. We will get through this, and we can have a supreme confidence because our hope is firmly anchored. Number one, a sovereign God, and number two, a resurrected Christ.
Well, thank you, Dave. This has been so much fun, and I want to thank everyone for listening to the podcast today as well. If you've enjoyed this, subscribe to our feed, share it with your friends, and if you've got a thought or a comment, question, anything that you want to send to us and let us know about, well, you can do that at our email address, podcast@searchnational.org, and until next time, thanks for listening.